Morning. Today's daf of Mitzvah is Nun Gimel. Thank you for the foundational sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zechnich Maslibik Aviel Bashmuel, we're on Nun Beis and Alf towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're talking about Onah as it relates to money, currency. In the time of the Mishnah, time of the Gemara, currency was primarily silver and minted coins, and the value of the coin and its power of currency was based on its metal content, on its silver content. In terms of the Isser of Onah, as it relates to coins, so the Mishnah, which started on Nunaf Amud Beis in the bottom, gave us three opinions in terms of what at what point in time has the coin worn down so much that the actual physical weight of the coin has been depleted, diminished, so that now you are approaching the Isser of Onah in the Mishnah. So there are three opinions that are recorded, the opinions of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir says that it's a 24th, Rabbi Yehuda says it's a 12th, and Rabbi Shimon says it's a 6th. We already asked a question yesterday that's a little bit unusual, that when it comes to goods and commodities, so it's a 6th. And there's a sheet of Rabbi Tarfon that says it's the 3rd. But in other words, that's it. There's no lower threshold than the 6th. And meanwhile, when it comes to currency, so there are two opinions amongst the Tanaim that have lower thresholds, a 12th and a 24th, that already represents Onah. So how does that work? So the Gemara addressed that question. We gave two answers. One could be that the Machlokas here is the same Machlokas above, just that the Mishnah above only represented the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Or two, there could be a fundamental difference between money and goods. Money is just, there's more sensitivity in terms of the currency of money, and so therefore the Isser of Onah could in fact be different by currency than it is by goods. Then yesterday we spent the remaining minutes of yesterday talking about a brisa that's found in Unbezim at Aleph. The brisa is describing money and money eroding. What I'm going to do right now is I'm just going to go over the language of the brisa very quickly, and then we're going to finish up yesterday's daf, which is going to be just a conclusion of the discussion of the brisa, and then we move on to today's daf. So first things first, let me just review the brisa. The Brisa starts right in the middle of Nun Beis Amud Aleph. You'll see it's introduced in the Gemara with the word Gufa, right? It's a Tosefta, actually, to be more accurate. I know that because my Bikis in Toseftas. No, I know that because in the inside margin of the page it says Tosefta Paragimel. So if you look at the Toseftas in the third parak of Bamitzia, you're going to see this. You see this Brisa. It's a Brisa. Anyway, Ad Kamatei Asel Chaser V'Heba Onah. At what point is the coin going to be missing and there's going to be Onah? So this part of the brisa is literally a word for word repetition what we learned back in the Mishnah. Remeir Omer Abar Isurim Isuros Isol Dinar. So again, once you do the math and once you know the coinage, so it comes out to a 24th. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Dala Pundio Nos Pundayon LeDinar. So that's a 12th. And Rabbi Shimon Amar Shmona Pundio Shnei Pundayon LeDinar. Two Pundayons for one dinar, and that's a 6th. Okay. Word for word, verbatim, like our Mishnah. Then the Brisa goes on to describe. Yes, okay, Machra B'Shavya. Anything more than that. Now remember, we were confused yesterday, and it's fair to be confused. When we say more than, are we going, which direction are we headed? Are we headed to its original weight, or are we talking about away from its original weight? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that line of the Brisa. We're going to clarify that point later on. Ad Kamati Patech V'Heira Shalai Kaima. The Brisa then talks about another issue. It's somewhat related, but it's not the same. We're no longer discussing Onah, because now we're talking about the diminishment of a coin where it now is going down to half of its original value. Now, half of its original value, it goes without saying that there's Onah, meaning you cannot try to pass a coin like this as its original coin if it's half its weight value. And that point is obvious. What the Brisa over here is discussing is just simply keeping such a coin in your house. Meaning that, like I gave the analogy yesterday, like a counterfeit bill, if you know you have a counterfeit bill, you shouldn't even keep it in your house. I'm not saying what the law is. I'm just saying what is intuitively so. You shouldn't keep it in your house, because what's going to end up happening is you're going to give it to somebody else. He's going to pass it off as a counterfeit bill, even if you told him it was counterfeit, he's still going to pass it off as a counterfeit bill. And basically, you're entering into the discussion of Lifnei Iver. Misayeya Lidei Aveira. The Gemara doesn't use these terminologies, but that's basically the idea now. And we're basically discussing now at what point where you have a coin, it's eroded, and it's well past the point of Onaa, but now the discussion is no longer really Onaa discussion, it's just a simple discussion of how long can I keep the coin in my house without having to have to destroy the coin. So that's the next part of the Braisa. Ad Kamati Patech V'Yehei Rasha L'Kayma. So how long are you allowed to keep a coin? So besela shekel. So for a sela, the diminishment is a shekel. And as we discussed yesterday, meaning that a sela erodes, to the point where it gets to half of its weight. Half of the weight of the sela is now a shekel. Anything beyond that point in time is no good. And there was, we explained yesterday, the reason why it's no good, meaning you have to destroy that point in time, is because anything less than a shekel now is going to be able to be passed off as a shekel. Meaning that the shekel coin, the sela coin, are pretty similar to one another, with the only difference being, obviously, the weight content. But once it now erodes past the point of a shekel, so at that point in time, it could be used as a counterfeit, and do not keep it anymore. No one, meaning if it's over half of its original value of the sela, no one's going to pass it off as a sela, meaning no one's going to make that kind of confusion. So the Gemara says, so up to half you can keep it. Bedinar ad rova, and when it comes to a dinar ad rova, now, in yesterday's Gemara, we explained this point of the brisa, which means that when it comes to a dinar, we don't mean a quarter of a dinar, because then it would be strange. Then the brisa would be asymmetrical. When it comes to the sela, half the value of a sela, which is a shekel. When it comes to a dinar, a quarter of a dinar, so the Gemara said yesterday, as one explanation, which the Gemara seemed to really like, and that is that when the Gemara says over here, Rova, it doesn't mean a quarter of the dinar, it means a quarter of the shekel, which is half of a dinar. Anyway, Pachos Mikan, Isar Asur. Anything less than an Isar is a coin, is going to be prohibited. This line of the Braisa is extraordinarily cryptic. Stay tuned, we're going to the Gemara is going to explain that line of the Braisa. You can't give this coin away to anybody. Meaning the coin that is eroded to the past the point of where you're allowed to maintain it. You can't give it to anybody. You can't give it to a merchant. You can't give it to unscrupulous people. Haram is an extortionist, and a harag is a murderer. Okay. In other words, as I suggested yesterday, we're not talking about a scenario where your life is at stake. If your life is at stake, presumably you would be allowed to part with it in order to save your life. We're talking about just simply, you can't give it away to anybody. Because what they're going to do with it is they're going to take this coin and they're going to use it in order to try to cheat other people. What you're supposed to do with the coin is hang it around, pierce a hole in the middle of it. Now, I gave away some of the Gemara coming up ahead, but that's fine. You pierce a hole in the middle of it, and you basically have your children wear it as necklaces. But that's it. In other words, you can't do anything more than that, and you have to destroy it. Adkan, that is the beginning to the end of the Tosefta. Some of the Tosefta I explained based on the Gemara that we learned yesterday, and some of the Tosefta still needs clarification. So, drop down now a couple of lines. Pachos Mikan Isar, Asar. If it's less than an Isar, then it's going to be Asar. So that was a line of the Braisa that we just went over together. And as I mentioned when reading the Braisa, that part of the Braisa is cryptic. And my Kamar, which prompts the Gemara to ask the very simple question of, what in the world does the Braisa say? What is the Braisa trying to communicate? Am Rabbi Hachi Kamar Pachsa Yisela Yoser Michdeo Na'a Isar Asar. So Abai takes the first crack at the pshat in this braisa, and Abai says, it goes like this. That if, let's say, the sela goes down to a shekel, which is, again, half the original weight value of the sela, and then what seemingly the braisa said was, anything after that, you got to destroy the coin. What Abai now is saying is, no. Now you're allowed to let it go down an entire isar's worth of weight, and then and only then you have to destroy it. So you're actually afforded an additional cushion even after the midway point. So the Gemara says, that's Abaye's pshat in the braisa. Amalei Ravi, yahachi afilu mashu nami. So Ravi says to Abaye, what? No, that's not the pshat in the braisa. In fact, the braisa seemed pretty clear that once it gets to less than half, anything beyond that, mashu, is going to be prohibited. That's a simple reading of the braisa. So Rava categorically rejects Abaye's explanation of that line of the braisa. Elam Rava, pichsa sela isar lidinar asar. So Rava says, no, what this line of the braisa is doing is just going back to the ona'a discussion, which was the first discussion of the braisa. And what the braisa is telling us is that if you have a sela and it goes down in value, in weight, by an isar, so then it's going to be asar. Now, again, I know I don't have all the numbers right in front of you right now, but if you do the math, and you don't even have to do the math, all you need to do is just go back to the Mishnah, right, and read the Mishnah again. Whose opinion was that? So that's Rameir's opinion, meaning if you look back at the Mishnah, Isar Ladinar, which is the 24th. So Usamakar Rameir. And basically all the Brisa did, according to Rava, is just throw a line into the middle of the Brisa, Stamkar Rameir. Okay? Tanan Hasam. Icon. No, I'm sorry, we're not done yet. Sorry. There's still more to go in terms of the explanation of the Brisa. We are going to learn together a Mishnah in Kalim. Selash Nifzala, if you have a coin that becomes voided. The government decided that we're minting a new currency, and so, like we've discussed already a number of times in the fourth parak of Bamitzia, so this particular coin now is out of circulation, no longer recognizes currency. Okay, fine, so I can't use it as currency anymore, so I'm going to be a little bit creative. You know what, we'll use it as a counterweight. Fine, so Timmea. Now that I'm using it as a counterweight, so now it's a kli that is subject to the laws of Tumah. It's susceptible to Tumah because it has now functionality. Okay, I remember, I remember having a general discussion of whether coins in by themselves are subject to Tumah, which the Gemara over here, the Mishnah over here is not describing. The Mishnah over here is describing a coin that is out of circulation that I've now am using as a counterbalance. So over here, it has functionality to it. So, Tamea ad kamati patech v'yei resha lekaima. And here the Mishnah Kalim now is discussing more or less the same issue that we discussed back in the second part of the Brisa. And that is, we understand that it's going to erode. At what point in time can I keep it? So, l'sela shnei dinarim. So for a sela, it's going to be 2 dinarim. Okay, again, the more we see this, the more you're going to become familiar. 2 dinarim is a shekel. A shekel is half of a sela. So it basically is exactly reflective of what we learned back in the Brisa. So l'sela shnei dinarim pachus mikan. Anything less than that, yikotz. You have to pierce the coin. Yes, alkein mai. Now, what if it's anything more than that? So, I'm a Rav Huna, pachus mikan yikotz. Yes, alkein yikotz. Now, Rav Huna takes a very interesting position, which is, well, you have to pierce it under either scenario, whether it's less than a half or whether it's more than a half. Now, of course, that's not the simple reading of the Mishnah and Kalim, but the Gemara is going to ask that question, so we'll just wait a moment. Rabbi Ami Amar Pachus Mikan Yikotz Yasa Kan Yikayim. And Rabbi Ami says, no, the Pshat in the Mishnah in Kalim is, anything less than that you're going to destroy, and anything greater than that, meaning as long as it's anywhere between the original weight value of a sela and half of that which is a shekel, or 2 dinarim, so then, Yikayim, you keep it around. So, that is Rabbi Ami's position, which I would say is the simpler way to read the Mishnah in Kalim. Meisvei. The Gemara challenges, yes, okay, so, anything greater than that, Mochra B'Shavya. Now, this is a quote from the Brisa. Now, we already went through the Brisa in the beginning of this year today, and as I quoted the Brisa, I told you, we don't know what that line means yet. Here's now where we're going to see what that line means in the Brisa. So, the Gemara quotes it, My love Shepichsa Yosem Mechdeo Nasa. So, the Gemara says, well, aren't we talking about a case where it went down more than the value of Ona'a? So, in other words, we're talking about a coin where it is eroded past Ona'a, which is anywhere in the range of a 24th to a 6th, it goes past Ona'a, but it hasn't yet arrived at the halfway mark. What does the Brisa now seem to tell us? Anywhere between post Ona'a and up to a half, sell it b'shavya. You could sell it at its face value, meaning whatever you can get for that coin. So that would seemingly be pshat of the Brisa. If that's pshat in the Brisa, that would be great for Rabbi Ami. That would be difficult for Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna says that once you're post Ona'a, so then yikotz, you have to destroy it. So the Gemara says, lo, yesera dakati lo pachsa bechtei onasa. So mochra b'shavya. So the Gemara says, no, that's not what the pshat, that's not what the Brisa actually means. You misunderstood the Brisa. What the Brisa means is that the Brisa is not talking about post Ona'a, the Brisa is talking about pre Ona'a, meaning that the coin went down, but has not yet arrived at the point of Ona'a, which is, again, anywhere in the range of a 24th to a 6th. And all the Brisa is telling us is, as long as you are still within, as long as you're still within Ona'a, so now you can use a coin and Bishavya, face value. Meaning, it's a currency. So you can still use the coin at its currency rate. Mitzvah. So the Gemara then quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, up until what point in time is it going to be diminished and you're allowed to keep it? So for a seller, a shekel. So if it's a seller, it's up to a shekel, which is half, meaning, and you can keep it around. So my love, the pach is porta porta. Now the Gemara says, now again, if you are Rabbi Ami, perfect. And it gets exactly what you think. And that's how we explain the Mishnah Kalim. That anywhere from Sela to Shekel, from 100% to 50%, you're allowed to keep it around. Which is exactly what Rabbi Ami said. Rav Huna tells you no. At the 50% mark, you can keep it. But if it's anywhere between 100 to 50, you have to, well, from 100 to Ona, you can still keep it. From Ona down to 50, you have to destroy it. So the Gemara says, now what's Rav Huna going to explain? How is he going to explain the Braisa? Lo denafa lenura ve'ifchus bechad azimna. So what Rav Huna will do to the Braisa is give a, it's a fourth pshat, but it's a pshat in the Braisa. What the Braisa is telling us is, it went straight from 100 down to 50. How did that happen? He gives the nukimta, it went into a fire, so, and then the fire destroyed it to where it exactly is now 50% of its original value. Then and only then are you allowed to keep it. But if it erodes anywhere from Ona'a to 50, you have to destroy it. Okay, that's how Rav Huna will read the Braisa and defend his position. Amar Mar Yikvenevi Yilene B'tzavar B'no B'tzavar B'ito. Okay, a couple more points that we need to go over in order to finish the Braisa. The Braisa says, once you're past the halfway point of its original weight content of the coin, you have to destroy it. And you could pierce a hole in it and use it as a necklace for your son or daughter. Urim minhu. The Gemara says, Lo yisena mishkal ben mishkal asav, lo yizrkena ben gru dosav, v'lo yikaven ev yilana b'tzavra b'no v'tzavra b'ito. The Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa says, you can't do anything with it, meaning you can't use it as spare parts, you can't even use it as a necklace, ela o yischok, o yitoch, o yikotz, o yilo yolich liyama melech. When you have a coin that is diminished in its weight value to anything below 50%, the Braisa says, utter destruction of the coin is the only acceptable solution. So, Amar Rav Elazar, Amila, Rav Huna, Amar Rav Elazar, Lokash Kam Be'emtza Kam Min Atzad. So the Gemara says, well, okay, the when the Braisa disqualifies even the piercing of the coin, it means you're not allowed to pierce it at the edge of the coin. What you're allowed to do, and that's what the Braisa allowed us to do, is you're allowed to pierce the coin in the center of the coin. And the difference explains Rashi as follows. When you're piercing in the center, everybody now knows this is a disqualified coin. And so it's, right, no one's going to try to pass it off as a coin. Masha Einkein, when you're piercing it only from the edge, so you give it to somebody and he is not scrupulous, what does he do? He shaves off the edge, rounds off the piercing, and just makes use of it. Ad kan divrei habraisa. Okay, so that takes us to a conclusion of the Tosefta, and every line of the Tosefta has now been explained, albeit some parts of it still subject to a debate with what exactly it means. But basically, to recap, when you have a coin and it goes down beyond the point of Ona, you can no longer use its currency. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Three levels of Ona when it comes to a coin, 24th, 12th, 6th. Three opinions in the Mishnah. And there is a window of discovery, much like by durable goods, there was a window of discovery, which allows the buyer to return the item. So too, by coin, there's a window of discovery, but the Mishnah describes a window of discovery by coin to be a wider one than by the goods. And the Gemara now is going to pick up on exactly that point. So when you are living in the city, until you have enough time to show the coin to a money changer, and when you're in the village, Erev Shabbos. So by a coin, the window is a wider berth. By goods, it's not as wide. So the Gemara says, no, actually, tell you the truth, Abai says, there is no discrepancy. Previously, when we were talking about goods, we were only describing it in the city. Meaning, and then, the shear of goods and the shear of coins are one and the same. And according to Abaye, if you are in a village and you bought a good, not a coin, there is going to be there's going to be the same window of Erev Shabbos. So that is Abaye's approach. Rav Amar Talis Kol Ish Kimle Begava Sala Kevin Dala Kol Ish Kimle Begava Ela Shulchani Hilchach Bekrachim Dika Shulchani Asher Shulchani Bekfarim Daleka Shulchani Arde Shabbos is a Saka Lashuka. And Rav once again turns this into a more fundamental distinction between goods and coins. When it comes to goods, so people can generally appraise goods. When it comes to coins, however, there you need an expert, and that is the distinction between the two. When it comes to goods, so the window of discovery is always going to be the time it takes to show somebody else, because generally anybody and everybody can appraise a good. When it comes to coins, understand that only a shochani, only someone who is really fluent in coins and money changing, only such a person can really appraise a coin. So therefore, if you're living in the city, so you have one right there, fine. If you're living out in the kfarim, so therefore you're extended the courtesy of a market time when you're going to the city in order to buy. Gemara continues. Then the Mishnah says something at the very end, which is unbelievably cryptic. And now we're going to decipher the last part of the Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah, which is on the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph, talks about a 12-month window. Im haya makira. I'm just rereading the Mishnah. Im haya makira. If you recognize that you got taken advantage of, afil achash 12 chodesh, even after 12 months, mikabla himenu, he can take it back from you. 12 months later, the ein lo alav elataramas, and all you have is just a complaint. That line of the Mishnah is cryptic. We pointed that out when we read the Mishnah. The Gemara now is going to decipher. Im haya makira afil achash 12 chodesh hecha. So the Gemara's question now is a really simple question. What is the Mishnah talking about? If you're living in the city, the window of opportunity is the amount of time that it takes to go to a money changer who's right there in town. It should be less than a day, significantly less than a day. And if you're out in the village, you're given a 1 week maximum window of discovery. So what in the world is the Mishnah talking about when it's talking about a 12-month window of discovery where you now could return it? So Rav Chista says that we're talking about Midas Chasidus. Okay. I like the alliteration over here of Chista and Chasidus. So Amar Chista Midas Chasidus Shanukan. What the Mishnah is talking about is, we are talking about, the Mishnah first is talking about the strict letter of the law, and then the Mishnah goes on to describe somebody who wants to be a chassid, somebody who goes well beyond the letter of the law. So Ihachi, so the Gemara says, that's fine. So good. So you have a person who handed money to somebody. Money turned out to be no good. Discovered only half a year later. Only. And so, a strict letter of the law is, he comes back to you, you say to him, I'm really sorry, it's too late. You took the money, you had time to make your discovery, it's too late. And if you want to be a chassid, you'll take the money back. So the Gemara says, that's fine. But now let's go to the next part of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, now you can file a complaint. Who's filing a complaint? So the Gemara says, if we're discussing a chassid, so if the chassid does not want to take the money, in other words, if you're a chassid, you'll basically do one of two things. You'll take the money and smile and say, sorry, even though it's half a year later, even though it's almost a full year later, you'll take the money back in your smile, and of course you're a chassid. You're not going to be lodging a complaint, or the Gemara says, don't take back the money and don't complain. But in other words, to take back the money and have a complaint, you're not a chassid. Ve'ela lahachzir kabla minei, ulabastim kabla minei tarom sa'avilei, and the Gemara says, and after you take it back, you're going to then lodge a complaint, hachi kamar, ha'acher, so the Gemara says, that last line of the Mishnah is no longer talking about the chassid, obviously. But rather what's talking about is zachir, it's talking about a regular person. A person who's following the strict letter of the law, which is fine. Meaning, you don't have to be a chassid. It's nice, but you don't have to be. And you want to follow the strict letter of the law, that's fine. And now, the one who accepted the money a week ago, a month ago, almost a year ago, so what is he going to have? He'll have a complaint. Meaning, but that's all he has. Because he had a window of discovery. He should have taken the time at the window of discovery to discover whether or not the coin was good or not. It's now past that time. So now you know what you could do? You'll file a complaint. And file it with whom? Whoever cares to listen. Okay, but no, Thank you. Okay, and then you could use it as chilul for Meister Shenin. Okay, so here we go. From here until the end of today, in the end of the daf today, we're going to be talking about Meister Shenin. Let's review. We've done this a lot in the fourth parak. Perfectly understandable. Meister Sheni is all about taking your Meister Sheni fruit and deconsecrating onto a coin, taking the coin, making use of it in Yerushalayim to buy your food and eat it in Yerushalayim. So, it obviously involves coins, and so it makes perfect sense that we are going to be quoting extensively from the Mishnayos of Meister Sheni over here in the fourth parak of Bamitzvah. It's a great shidduch. Okay. What we're learning together now is the following. You have a coin that is, I know that's not the greatest adjective, but in other words, for our purposes, it's great. Meaning, it's a perfect description of the coin. It can be used, it's not the greatest. Has it arrived at the point of, for our purposes, let's say no. Let's just say that it's, whatever, it's bent, it's distorted, it's warped. But it's not the kind of coin where you hand it to the merchant and he looks at it and he says, okay, this is great. He looks at it and he looks at it funny and he's like, do I have to take this coin? Do you have another coin? You have to bring the coin to a money changer. The money changer looks at the coin and he's going to say to you, really? I don't know. Do I have to? And so there's a lot of hemming and hawing over a coin like this. So what the Mishnah told us is that if you have a coin like this, you could still use it to be mechalal your Meister Sheni. So in other words, you're living well outside of Yerushalayim, you have your Meister Sheni that you collected, your second 10% that you have accumulated in the first, second, fourth, fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. So you're supposed to bring the food to Yerushalayim and eat in Yerushalayim, but that's onerous. So what the Torah allows you to do is to deconsecrate it onto coins, take the coins to Yerushalayim, most probably going to do that when you're Ola Lerego, and spend it in Yerushalayim and v'chule v'chule.
If the coin is not usable now, don't you have to use it once you go to Yerushalayim?
Okay, so stay tuned. Perfect. Stay tuned. So the Gemara now is going to be discussing the following. The seemingly simple shot of the Mishnah is that you could take this coin, which is not, it's not past the point of Ona'ah, it's just simply not great. And you can use it to be Mechal your Meister Sheni, and anyone in Yerushalayim who doesn't accept it, we're going to give a term for that person. We're going to call him Nefesh Ra'ah. He's a miser. He's not magnanimous. And to which now the Gemara discusses the following. Amar Papa, Shema Mina Hayman de Moki Mazuzei Mikrei Nefesh Ra'ah. So anyone who's Moki Mazuzei, who basically refuses to accept such a coin, so we have the right to describe that person as Nefesh Ra'ah. Now, I'm not really sure what we're saying over here. We're condoning name calling, and I don't think that's the point of Rapapa. More probably, what he's just simply saying is that a person who's interested in building and working on his character should be more than willing to accept such a coin, even though it's a little shaky.
Are you asking to accept it at face value?
Perfect. Excellent. I'm only going to ask you to wait because I know the Gemara is going to be discussing that very question. V'hani milu desagileg. And the Gemara points out, but it has to be that this coin can still be used in circulation. It won't be well received, but it's still going to be received. Again, I don't exactly know at what point we are in the distorted coin, in the distortion of the coin, but there still the Gemara says that there will be some people who are going to accept it. Mind you, by the way, Rav Papa was a wealthy man. I'm just saying this as an interesting side, not because it really influences his psak, but in other words, he was constantly involved in commercial activity. He made his money on the sale of beer. Okay, brewmaster. So anyway, so v'hani milu desagileg. So he says, as long as some people still accept this coin in circulation, so you should be the kind of person who readily accepts the coin. So the Gemara says this really falls in line with what Chizkiah said. Chizkiah said that if you're coming to be mefaret, meaning you're going to a money changer, and you're going to take this coin, which is and you're going to now ask him to make change out of it. So you make change out of it at face value, meaning what it is a coin, and as a currency, it has a theoretical value. But again, their coins were really primarily based on its weight, its cleanliness, its appearance, etc., etc. So when you make change of it, whatever the change maker decides, whatever the Shulchani decides is going to be fair exchange for that coin, that's what you get. But when you deconsecrate Maaser Sheni on it, Yafeh, at this point I'm going to say the pshat is that you can be mechala based on not its actual value, but on its on its assumed value, meaning it's a coin of, let's say it's a stela, you can deconsecrate it assuming that it's a stela. Now, that's what we think Chizkiah is saying. It certainly seems that way because he is contrasting actually making change versus deconsecrating your Maaser Sheni on it. So my kamar hachi kamar, the Gemara says, I think this is a pshat. Alpha pikir shabala porta porta b'shaviyah kishu mechala mechala b'yafa. And the Gemara, what I just said is what the Gemara suggested. I only said it because I knew this. I knew it was coming up. The Gemara says that that's what I think Chizkiah is saying. That when you're making change out of it, the money changer will tell you exactly how much it's worth and how much he's going to be giving you in exchange for this large coin. It's a seller coin, but the money changer is looking at it and saying to himself, my friend, look at it. It's bent. In other words, he'll give you the full explanation. In my mind, you know, it's like when you buy diamonds, which I've done in my life so few times. But when you buy diamonds, so in other words, he's talking to you in a language that you don't understand, and assuming that you trust him, and he's honest, so he'll throw terms around that will explain to you why this diamond is worth what it's worth. Here, the money changer, you know, is going to explain to you. Look, you see the bend over here. You see the crap. In other words, it is worth not. I'll just throw out examples. Right, a sella is worth 48 pundayon. Okay, again, we're in the fourth paragraph of Bamitsia, so right now all these numbers are fresh in my mind. You know, ask me a month from now and I won't know any of this. So let's say a seller is worth 48 pundayon. So the money changer will look at it and say, no, not this seller. Meaning this particular seller, it's bent, it's a little rusted, et cetera, it's tarnished. I'll give you 46. Or I'll give you 44. So in other words, so he'll tell you how much to make change of. But when you're mechala, my sasheni on it, so you can work with an assumption that it is a seller valued at 48 pundayon. That's what Chizkiah is saying. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. So basically what you're telling me now is that when you're in the real world and making real change out of this, so he'll tell you, the money changer will tell you how much it's worth. But when I'm being Mechala Maaser Sheni, this is a religious activity. You know what? Let's assume that's really worth 48 pundayon. What's the big deal? And the Gemara is kind of astonished at this suggestion. And you can do that, and you could just simply degrade Maaser Sheni by knowing that this coin is not really worth 48 pundayon, not on the market. And for Maaser Sheni, you can assume that 48 pundayon, you're really allowed to do that. We have another statement made by none other than Chizkiah, who is going to tell us exactly the opposite. Let's say you have the following scenario. Let's say you have Maaser Sheni fruit, which is not worth a pruta. Okay. That means a single grape. Let's just assume, again, we're not holding by money in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, but let's just assume that a single grape is not worth a single pruta. Okay. A pruta, by the way, is the smallest coin that they had back then. Let me do that again. Eight prutas go into an iser, and two isers go into. Okay, whatever. Come back to me. Anyway, pruta is the smallest coin. You have Maaser Sheni fruit, but it's not even worth a shava pruta. What do you do with it? So, what you do is the following. You take a coin that you already deconsecrated Maaser Sheni fruit on, and you take this single grape, and you deconsecrate it onto that coin. You know why, says Chizkiah? I'll tell you why. Because when you deconsecrated the first time onto this money, you did so generously. Meaning that you are going to take a coin valued more than your Maaser Sheni actual fruit. Because that's what people do. People are going to err on the side of caution when deconsecrating their fruit onto money. So therefore, you can safely assume that there's going to be enough room for a single grape valued at less than a pruta. So now, you see what just happened. These two statements of Chizkiah are going in the opposite direction. The first statement of Chizkiah is that when you take a coin that may not be worth its full face value of 48 pundayon, you can assume so, it's fine. So that means that we are going to err not on the side of caution, but basically, it's okay. We're deconsecrating Meister Sheni. You know what? It doesn't have to be an exact amount. And meanwhile, this second statement of Chizkiah is saying, indicating the exact opposite. That when people deconsecrate their Meister Sheni fruit, they do so generously, erring on the side of caution, using a coin that is going to definitely be more valuable than the actual fruit itself. And evidence for that is that you can safely assume that there's going to be enough room in that coin for a little bit more. So the Gemara says, "My biyafa b'toros yafeh." The trade deal lamazazlan bay. So the Gemara says, "Okay, here's what we'll do. We'll now give a pshat in the original statement of Chizkiah. We thought that what he meant was is that when I'm redeeming Meister Sheni onto a coin, I could do so at face value, even though the coin is bent or distorted or somehow physically corrupted. I could treat it like at face value." The Gemara is saying that's not what Chizkiah meant. What Chizkiah meant is that I could use the coin as a coin, but not at face value, at actual value. That's what he meant. And it's true that he said the word yafeh, but the Gemara here qualifies what he meant by yafeh is Toras Yafeh, meaning you could still treat it like a coin of currency, but in terms of its value is going to be whatever its actual value is. Amr Chizkiah, Meister Sheni Sheim Bo Shavapruta, Omer Huve Chamshom Mechula Amas Rishonim Lefishi Yavshar Lo La Adam Lefsam Tse Mausav. Now we're going to go to the second statement of Chizkiah, and the Gemara is going to try to attack, analyze it, etc., etc. Second statement of Chizkiah is that, let's say you have a single grape of Meister Sheni, it's less than a pruta, so what do? I take a coin that already has the deconsecrated Meister Sheni produce in it, and with the assumption that there's going to be enough room for the single grape, I'll transfer the Kedusha from the grape onto that same, very same coin. Meisvei, the Gemara is challenging now based on the following Mishnah. Mishnah reads like this. Truma and Bikurim both have sanctity. Truma, your Truma Gedola that you take off of your produce, 2% off, right off the top, which goes to the Kohen, has Kedusha, is given to a Kohen, only eaten by Kohen. Bikurim, first fruits that are brought to Yerushalayim, given to a Kohen. So, Chayavam Aleha Misa. Point one. If you are a non-Kohen, or if you're a Kohen Tame, and you eat either Truma or Bikurim, subject to Misa B'dei Shemayim. Point number two, Chamish. A non-Kohen who eats Truma or Bikurim inadvertently, having forgotten that it was Truma or Bikurim, so you have to make full restitution and a 25% surcharge. I know Chamish is 20. We've gone over this numerous times. The Asurim Lazarim, on the top of Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, prohibited to be eaten by non-Kohen. A seemingly superfluous point at this point in time in the Braisa, in the Mishnah, that already is clearly indicated by Chayev and Lamisa and Chomish. Rashi addresses that. Anyway, we move on. The Hei Nichse Kohen, property of the Kohen. Once you give it to a Kohen, it's his property. He could do whatever he wants with it. He wants to go over to a woman and say, Harei Mekadesh Shasli Chumazu. Absolutely has the right to do so. It's his property. In terms of bittul, when is it subject to bittul? When the ratio is 100 to 1. Normally, bittul only requires rov. When it comes to truma, it's 100 to 1. The simplest way to say it is that that's a rabbinic stringency given to truma. That's the easiest way to say it. It's most probably correct, but you can make an argument. Utuun rechitzas yadayim. Prior to eating truma or bikurim, the kohen has to wash his hands. Harev Shemesh, if a Kohen is Tameh and would like to eat Truma, he has to, assuming it's not Tumas Mace, he has to go to the Mikvah, wait till the sun sets, and then and only then he's allowed to eat it. First Mishnah and Brachos. Hare Eilu B'Truma V'Kurim Masha Inkim B'Maiser. Now all this is true by Truma and Bikurim, but this is all not going to be true when it comes to Maiser. The term Maiser over here is specific to Maiser Sheni. Now, that is the Mishnah. The Gemara now wonders, my love she'ein kein b'meiser. Now we're contrasting every one of these points to meiser. And the Gemara attacks in the following manner. Lav mechal de meiser bata beruba. Now, what seemingly is the contrast is when it comes to Truman Bikurim, to arrive at the point of Bittul, you need a ratio of 100 to 1. 100 non-Truma getting mixed in with one part Truma, then and only then you arrive at the point of Bittul. Seemingly, what that means is that, contrasting that to Maaser Sheni, when we are talking about Maaser Sheni, if I have Maaser Sheni mixed in with other fruit, and as long as the other fruit is Rove, as long as it's a majority, 51% more than the Maaser Sheni, we have arrived at the point of Bittul. Asks the Gemara now the following question. V'imisa de Chizkiya, now according to Chizkiya, when I have Maaser Sheni produce, what do I do with it? I deconsecrate it onto money. And even if it's less than a pruta, I can deconsecrate it onto money. I'll just simply take a coin that has already been deconsecrated once, make the safe assumption that there's still a little bit of room left, and I'll deconsecrate it into that very coin. So now, according to Chizkiya, whenever I have Maaser Sheni, and even if it gets mixed up with others, there's always going to be a solution, and that is going to be deconsecration. Now, if there's always going to be a solution, and that's called deconsecration, so we have arrived at the point of Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin, which means now that when I have Maaser Sheni, I can always turn it into Heter. As we've seen throughout the Gemara, if you have Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin, it is never subject to Bittul. The easiest way to explain it is based on Rashi.
That's time dependent.
Rashi says that the reason why is Achi Ochlenu Beheter. Sorry, let me say that again and better. Achi Ochlenu Beiser Tochlenu Beheter. Because why do I need to rely on Bittul? Let me just simply eat it in. Let me wait until it becomes Heter. Now, Ben points out that, and he's right. Normally, the Heter is a time dependency Heter. The classic example is the first Mishnah in Beitza, where the egg is laid on Yontif. After Yontif, it's going to become Mutter. Over Yontif, it's Muktza. After Yontif, it's going to be Heter. And so, Ben points out very correctly that generally, Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin is just simply that if we wait and do nothing more than wait, we're going to be fine. Admittedly, over here, this is a stranger application of the principle of Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin, because you actually have to deconsecrate in order to create the Heter. His point is well taken. The Gemara assumes, however,
I mean,
that this...
When it's passive, when it's active, it's a big
deal. Agreed. The Gemara assumes, however, over here, that this still falls under the category of Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin. It's a really good point. So, the Chol Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin Afilu Be'alaf L'Batal. So the Gemara says now, so if Chizkiya is right, why is there ever going to be Bittul by Maaser Sheni if you can create Heter? So the Gemara now entertains an explanation of the Mishnah, which we're going to emphatically reject. But let's at least entertain it. Maybe what the Mishnah means in contrasting Truma to Maaser Sheni is that Truma there's Bittul, ratio of 100 to 1. By Maaser Sheni there's no Bittul whatsoever. Maybe that's the pshat in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, The Gemara says, no. You know, that's not the theme of the Mishnah. The theme of the Mishnah is, here are the stringencies of Truma over that of Maaser Sheni. So the Gemara says, that's not really true, because one of the points that's mentioned is that it is Nechse Kohen. That when it comes to Truma, once you give it to the Kohen, he could do with it as he pleases. That's a simplification, but it's his property. That's not true by Maaser Sheni. So you see that even thematically, it's not only chumras of truma. So the Gemara says, still losa chadada tatanya b'hadja. The Gemara says, okay, I'll give you that point, but it's just what you're saying is not correct. That Maaser Sheni is never subject to bittul. Maaser Sheni batul beruba. Uveizer Maaser Sheni amr by Maaser Sheni b'shava pruta. Ushenichnas Yushalayim v'yatsa. So the Braisa says that there is going to be bittul when it comes to Maaser Sheni. And if you go into Yushalayim and you come out, which we're going to explain better in just a moment what that means, there is going to be bittul by Maaser Sheni. V'imisa ledechizkia le'avet le'la dechizkia v'necho le'am maaser rishonos. So once again, let's ask our question. If Chizkia is right, what you have Maaser Sheni, and you can always be mechalalit, and even if it's less than a shavapruta, you could still be mechalalit on a pre-existing, on a pre-deconsecrated coin. So why don't we do like him? And if we do like him, that means it's a davar sheyesh l'matirin. And if it's a davar sheyesh l'matirin, there should be no bittul. So the Gemara says the lo parik. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the situation over here is so unusual that you have no coins that were already deconsecrated. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, Nasi Maisa de Slave Nitzafunu. So the Gemara says, well, if that's your problem, so get a coin. And just simply combine this with other Maaser Sheni. So the Gemara says, Daraisa v'Darabban lo mitzdarf. The Gemara says, well, you can't combine them because one is Daraisa and the other one is Darabbanan. What does that mean? Rashi explains. And I'll do this really quickly. Perhaps at the expense of clarification, but I'll do this really quickly. When I have Maaser Sheni fruit that's over a pruta, so the Torah acknowledges that you can deconsecrate onto a coin. When I have fruit that is less than a pruta, the Torah does not acknowledge that you can deconsecrate it. It is only a rabbinic allowance to do so. So what I can't do is I can't deconsecrate a pruta and a half a pruta's worth of Maaser Sheni onto a coin, because then I'm combining Daraisa to Darabbanan. So the Gemara says, V'nesi Demai. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we bring along some Demai Dama Asil Asu Yevadev, and I say, I'm sorry, Dilma Asil Asu Yevadev. So the Gemara says, well, I can't do that because instead of bringing Demai, which is possible, which possibly needs deconsecration, I may in fact bring Vadai in instead. V'nesi Shiyoshte Prutas V'nechal Alayu Maiser Bepruta Umechsa, I'm sorry, V'nechal Alayu Maiser Bepruta Umechsa. So the Gemara says, so why don't I bring two pruta coins and why don't I deconsecrate my pruta and a half's worth of my sasheni onto the two prutas coin? So the Gemara says, well, that you can't do me. As far as pruta mechsa tafsa shte prutos, lo. Pruta tafsa pruta vechati pruta lo tafsa. The Gemara says, I can't do that because the pruta's worth of my sasheni will hit the pruta coin, and then that only leaves you a half pruta's worth of my sasheni, which on a daraisa level cannot be deconsecrated. V'naisi iser, so the Gemara says, why don't I just simply bring one single large coin? So the Gemara says, well, once we start allowing to bring coins, a person may end up bringing prutos, and that leads to problems. Okay, fine, period. So basically what the Gemara has arrived at is the conclusion that there is simply no way to deconsecrate it. Once there's no way to deconsecrate it, now there is no heter, and that's when the Braisa teaches us that by Maaser Sheni, it can be subject to bittul. And unlike Truma, which requires a ratio of 100 to 1, when it comes to Maaser Sheni, as long as you can't deconsecrate it, which requires a lot of factors to get to that point, but as long as you can't deconsecrate it, so it then would be subject to bittul Beruf.